Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter the offer code VERBAL, V-E-R-B-A-L, at checkout and get 10% off. Squarespace. You should.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildenbrandt here, Dan Rubenstein over there, solidverbal at gmail.com. As always, is the email address. You can find us on Facebook, FanCred, Twitter, Instagram, and most importantly, out on iTunes at itunes.com/solidverbal. If you like the show, you can review, you can rate, you can subscribe, most importantly. Joined by Dan Rubenstein over there in New York City. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I want to stress even more. If you like the show, subscribe, review, tell your friends. That's always great. We're doing a lot of fun things this offseason. Last year, we did the Scheme theme month for the first time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you weren't around for part of that because you were off being selfish and getting married and spending
some time in
paradise with your lovely bride. But we're doing, not only are we going to do something similar to the Scheme theme this offseason, but we're going to build upon that and do some new stuff with coaches, without coaches, with friends, anything we want, basically. But the broader point is, tell your friends, like the page on Facebook. We're doing all sorts of fun things. Last week, we did a Q&A with Bill Connolly.
That's right.
I believe soon we're going to set up a Q&A with, God, our favorite college football author in the universe.
John U. Bacon. He's been elusive, Dan.
John U. Bacon is very popular, Ty.
He's been elusive, but we've been in touch with John, and he does want to come on. He insists he wants to come on and do the Q&A. We're going to have him on, I'm sure, at some point this offseason to talk about all things Michigan and whatever great stuff he's been up to. So, yeah, we've got that in the works as well. We've got some cool stuff in the pipeline here, not the least of which is the show we have planned to post tonight.
An emotional roller coaster.
An emotional roller coaster, I think, is the right way to phrase this.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 5 years ago, Dan? 5 years ago that we did our Tom Rinaldi spoof?
A little over 5 years, yeah.
5 years ago, the first time we were covering a national championship game out in Arizona, we did a spoof video of Tom Rinaldi. Everyone knows Tom Rinaldi. Tom Rinaldi, the great storyteller for ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
He saw the video. ESPN saw the video. They put it on ESPN News. It was one of those early shot in the arms for us. We got a lot of mileage out of it. We still enjoy watching it. We still enjoy talking about it. It was a lot of fun for us. Fast forward now to the hallways of the media hotel this past January.
Yep.
Dan, I believe, as the story goes, you bump into Tom Rinaldi in the hallway?
I saw Tom Rinaldi, went over and introduced myself. He was very, very kind, told him all about how we now had a banner. So we're a pretty huge deal. So, asked if he had a few minutes to come on the show, and he enthusiastically agreed and came in to Radio Row where we had our show set up and gave us a ton of time and could not have been nicer. I know everybody's shocked out there with the types of stories that he produces and hosts and reports. I'm very happy that we finally had the chance to sort of come full circle with him and talk to him about what he does and what we do. So, very excited for this.
We've got that interview coming up momentarily. Tonight's show, though, sponsored in part by our good friends over at Squarespace, Dan.
I'm building danrubenstein.com with Squarespace as we speak. Oh, okay. My God, the tasteful nudes, Ty.
There you go.
Could not be presented in a more clean, efficient, web-friendly fashion because of our friends at Squarespace.
I know you don't necessarily know how to do all the coding.
No, I definitely don't.
Okay, but you want to still build something that looks good and works well that isn't a time-consuming affair.
Right.
So whether it's a site like danrubenstein.com or a different portfolio, maybe for a restaurant, whatever else, you need some website, You should use Squarespace to do it because they make it really easy to build a beautiful website without breaking a sweat. Not only does Squarespace provide you with intuitive and easy-to-use tools to create your website, Squarespace also has state-of-the-art technology. It powers your site, Dan. It ensures security and stability. And as you know, you can trust in Squarespace for all your website needs. Millions of people already use it to build out sites for their respected brands.
Yeah, legitimately, Ty. Very good looking sites. I saw that if you want to set up an online store of some kind, we're going to try to sell 50,000 shirts. Maybe we'll use Squarespace within solidverbal.com or something. But very cool, very easy to use. I'm a fan.
Absolutely. So look, 24/7 online support, build a beautiful website. It's a no-brainer. You can start a trial with no credit card. You can start building it today. When you sign up, though, make sure you use the offer code VERBAL. V-E-R-B-A-L, V-E-R-B-A-L. We have a lot of people who ask after the fact. So VERBAL is your offer code. You get 10% off your first purchase, and it'll show your support for the show.
Ty, can I give you an impromptu challenge?
Yes.
Can you introduce our Tom Rinaldi interview as if you are reading from a Tom Rinaldi feature script?
Oh, wow.
This is a challenge. I know. We like spent hours trying to come up with the perfect Rinaldi's sentence.
I think I wrote the script, too.
Oh, you did a phenomenal job.
In the Valley of the Sun, there is only one guiding light.
Oh, so you're just doing our previous script.
I just put a little bit of a different spin on it, yeah.
Sometimes you don't speak to a man. A man speaks to all of us. That man isn't just one man, but in a way, isn't he all of us? Tom Rinaldi.
That's not bad, Dan.
I don't know what I meant. No sense.
It's just piecing words together, but I like it.
Thank you.
I would have gone Valley of the Sun with it, but...
Sure.
That's the lazy answer, I know. Call me after a long day at the office, so this is the best I can do. Yeah.
I think we combined to do a solid B-minus job, which is always the goal.
You pull me along. I appreciate that.
I do my best.
All right. Tom Rinaldi, we interviewed him out in Arizona. Have a listen. All right, Dan, we are joined by a very special guest here.
That doesn't even begin to explain.
It's rarefied air. It's Mount Rushmore, Mount Verbmore.
Sure, absolutely.
Whatever we want to call it.
He's canon.
He is canon. We've got some history with this gentleman. You know him well. He is the esteemed Tom Rinaldi from ESPN. Sir, how are you?
I'm waiting for the music cue.
Okay.
Trickly piano.
Exactly, which I can't control as a production
decision. We'll put it in post.
Oh, it's in post. Believe me, I'm sure you will. The violins, the harps, the whole deal, the whole orchestra. Great to be with you guys.
So speaking of canon, should we tell the story?
Yeah, briefly. So it was 5 years ago in Arizona, where we are right now. It was the first time we covered a national championship game, and we decided to do some video, came up with an idea to talk about our own time. We pointed the lenses at ourselves to talk about our own time. Staying in a not-so-great hotel.
Across from a strip club. The Dream Palace, I remember it well.
The Dream Palace.
Didn't go, but I remember
advertising.
It. Yep.
And we decided to tell our sort of mockumentary tale in a very Tom Rinaldi, ESPN, featurey way. And people seemed to like it and enjoy it, and it did well, and eventually it got aired on ESPN News. Our friend Steve Weissman then brought on Tom Rinaldi to break down our emotional journey to the then BCS National Championship. And 5 years later, here we are.
We're here. Manifest destiny. We've made it.
What did you think when you saw that video the first time?
That you guys were coming for me.
that was an honor.
I'm lucky to still have a job after I saw myself just skewered so perfectly. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I don't deserve that amount of flattery or imitation.
Oh, absolutely.
But, no, I do not. But I thought it was absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. And never did it get any more mileage, believe me, than within the ranks of my family.
The Rinaldi household?
Which absolutely loved it.
That's amazing.
As did I. I just thought it was hilarious.
I still remember the advice. Slow down in the delivery.
Yes, he did.
That was your one bit of advice at the very end of that bit on ESPN News.
And I get that. I do remember because I found the musical cue that we ended up using in our music library.
That's right.
And I felt, it's not that I was emotional about it, but I understood that, like, oh, that's what we need. That's the one. Do you, when you are, first of all, what is your involvement after the fact when you are producing these pieces?
I probably am, much to the consternation and annoyance of the producers, mm-hmm. far too meddlesome.
Sure.
And I will say that if there is one production point that I lose on most often, almost, I don't know that I've had a victory. Very
right.
rarely do I have a victory. It is music.
Okay.
The second would be pace or cadence of the track.
Mm-hmm.
My tracks get opened up often by the producers. I think I've worked hard over time to realize that I can be terribly overwrought and sort of dripping with melodrama, like you say, bathe in the emotion. And I think that's a flaw that I have that I've worked on, to just read it, just say it. But with the music and with the fact that sometimes producers want to open up a sentence, here's an example. We're doing a piece for the national championship game on Alti Tenpenny, a former Tide player who died. They wear a helmet sticker in his honor, and he died. He fell asleep driving on a Highway 1 in Mississippi. The scenic of the highway is beautiful and needs very little. You need to let people know, introduce them to the story in a way, hopefully, that hooks them. But I think 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have read that, the handful of lines there, in a more halting way. Now I fail the majority of the time, to just read it. But even when I do, a lot of times the producers open it up.
Sure. Sure. When you are selecting these stories, when you are, you know, hearing about these stories, what are you looking for, more broadly speaking? Because, listen, we live in the world is a great place, but it is a place that is filled with tragedy and unfortunate events, and there's so much happening. What do you specifically look for?
So I don't want this to be too long an answer.
Sure.
So I'll answer it in two ways. There are so many things. The world is a great place. It's an endless wonder. And to me, in what we do, I'm driven to cover two things, two topics. They're massively broad. But while there's other people who are going to cover corruption in government and injustice in the world, the two beats I'm most interested in covering are living and dying and greatness. Sport allows you to cover those two beats. The second way I would answer, Dan, is to say, what are the ways to make a story memorable? And I would say there are three ways, and these are the three ways in ascending order of difficulty. So beginning with number three, to move somebody. That's the most easily achieved. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do, even though I think I've risked long ago becoming a cliche in that column. Number two is much, much tougher. And that's to surprise somebody. I think I know this story. This is about X, Y, and Z. Here are the archetypes that we've heard 1,000 times before. But then something else happens. So to surprise a viewer in a story. And number one, by far, I don't know that I've ever done it in my career. And I don't know that it's really the job of a storyteller. It's the job of a journalist. And that's to provide a transcendent fact. A fact that makes you look at what you thought you knew differently. The example that I always use is a little bit of an obscure example. The event is massive. The event is the shuttle explosion in 1986.
Challenger.
Right? And one reporter, I believe a sign of the Wall Street Journal, sort of stayed with the NASA side of that for a long time and ultimately uncovered the fact that there was a group of engineers who had concerns about the O-rings,
right.
the rings that
right.
were ultimately
yep.
seen to be one of the causes of the explosion, and wanted to delay. But that the president wanted to refer to the launch in the State of the Union. I don't know that you can go pure cause and effect. It's too simplistic or facile to say there's causality there. But that still made me look at what happened differently. And that's sort of the highest threshold, I think, of when you tell a story, Can you give me a transcendent fact or surprise me or move me?
So to the movement point, you obviously put the narrative together. To what end do you find that you move yourself when you're putting these? You seem like you're an emotional guy. You certainly portray that when you do these bits. To what end are you writing this and have to put it aside?
I wouldn't call them bits, Tyler.
And I'll bits features, is fair.
Features. Stories. Parts of our
sir.
Parts of our fabric,
sure.
If you will.
I think you want to do two things in a story of this nature. And while when you venture into someone's life and you're asking them to share the most precious territory they have, and that's often what we do, thus wanting to tell the story, two things happen. One is you need to get out of the way as best you can to really be just the medium and nothing more. And I understand the production value, I understand the music choices, but a lot of times I oppose them because I think they're in the way as opposed to getting out of the way. Second thing is, when you leave somebody's home, and I'll give you a simple example. We did a story about a teenager who died this fall who formed a remarkable bond with Les Miles, a boy named Sid Ortiz.
Yeah. Yep.
And talking to Les Miles and his trepidation to do an interview because he thought, this is private and people could perceive it as me having done it to gain some credit or to buy some charitable view for people who don't like me. We saw how those people rose up at the end of the season against Les. And yet, when he does decide to share it, the pressure you feel when you leave that family's home or even leave the interview with Les Miles to honor that against the almighty governor in TV, time.
Mm-hmm.
And on game day and on national championship shows and pregame shows, I have such luxury with time, and yet I resent endlessly the time we don't get. Because to me, all due respect to everybody else, at the end of the day, and I wouldn't do this if I didn't believe it, you turn the TV off, what do you go and tell your friend about, your mom about, your child about? It's not analysis and the A gap. It's not. It's a story because it moved you or surprised you or made you look at something differently. That's why, and I would say my batting average in my career is .002. I mean, I think I did one story last year out of probably 40 that was actually good. Most of the times I squander that trust and I blow that opportunity. I really do, in the only jury that matters, the one here and here in my head and heart. But believe me, the toughest thing and where I become aggressive and harsh and brutal is in the fight for time. Because you're trying to honor what somebody has given you.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The college game day is, what now, a 3-4 hour show. Obviously, it's a
has a lot of voices.
Sport.
It's a huge success. It's a great show.
Yeah. Is it ever a little strange to you that you see these stories that are so real and so human sort of sandwiched? And that's not a pejorative, but it is sandwiched between let's talk to the Cheez-It real fan and like Paul Feinbaum yelling about how California shouldn't be allowed to have football teams. Is that a strange dynamic at all for you sometimes?
That's a great question, Dan. And I think we've learned how to manage that. In other words, Lee Fitting, who's the producer, right, who's brilliant, I think has learned that when a story has an emotional density and a weight, it's its own segment. We've learned not to have to try to pivot back to strategy. We go to break. We have the best director in the business in Tom Lucas, who understands pacing and how to frame that out. All that said, it is still a sandwich, and you do still want to entertain people. The headgear, the signs, the spontaneity, Herbie's star power, and the features. And I still would venture to say that when the features are done right, and I think Gene Wojciechowski had a phenomenal year this year in doing some of the best features that I've ever seen connected to the sport, that's what people take away. They make someone look at the game or a player differently.
Are there things out there that you've seen already? It's a pie in the sky story that you'd like to do.
Story about a bowler in Texas, and in documented bowling scores, a 900, right? three perfect games in
it's
a
pretty,
row.
It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Not
right,
bad.
Is the grail. It's the chalice, right? It's the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy bowled 200-300 games and was in, I believe, the 10th frame with a chance to bowl a 900. And he was getting very, very nervous, and his heart was palpitating, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't pull it off. Shortly after that, he had a heart episode and nearly died. And the cardiologist told him they had no doubt that if he had completed the 900, his heart would have failed.
Wow.
And I wanted to... That's all I need right there. If
true.
I can get through to Dan and have him say wow out loud.
That sound clip.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, and that would be my inspiration.
That's your new ringtone.
Exactly.
Well, you know, speaking of inspiration.
We didn't get the chance to do that. Fox did it. Fantastic producer there, and it came out beautifully.
Well, speaking of inspiration, so much of what you do, I guess to Dan's point about college football being littered to some degree with hot takes and A gaps and other types of analysis, but
which all has value.
All
in
has
place.
Value, but what you do as a storyteller is so opposite that. Where do you find that inspiration to kind of continue on down this track and improve upon what it is that you already do so well?
So here's an example. What Lee is always pushing us to try to do. He's always trying, and I would never say that I'm a weak reporter on the scale of great, good, weak, awful. I'd say I'm between weak and awful as a reporter. And Lee is always pushing us, you take me someplace that I can't go, right? Two words, access and discovery. Those are not his words, they're mine. But take me someplace I can't go and let me discover something in that place I didn't know. Not something in a media guide, not something statistic driven. So here's an example. And I haven't even said this on TV yet, and I'll probably save it till Monday night at some point, right? Mm-hmm. What's the first message Coach Saban gave to the team? First message when they were going to get ready to start this week to try to win a national championship. Already that's interesting.
Sure.
Okay? So he tells the story of Boat 2 and Boat 6 in SEAL team training. I don't even have to go any farther. I can look at you, and I can look at you, Ty, mm-hmm. and I already know you want to know the story.
Sure.
And already, that's where some of the inspirations come from. In other words, in the simplest spot, Ty, I want to know that. That curiosity is the best gauge, right? And quickly, the story is... He told the story of SEAL team training during Hell Week, where guys were put together and divided into teams, and in the ultimate prize, they had to carry boats into the oncoming tide and reach a marker out in the water. Very difficult to do. The guys were exhausted, and the reward was half an hour of rest if your team were to win a certain number of points. Team 2 was dominating Boat 2, dominating Boat 6. Boat 6 was getting completely shut out. And as they were coming back to try again, the instructors got together and decided to make one switch. They switched the team leader from 2 to 6, the dominant boat to the weak boat.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 won. With one change, the team leader, his point to the team, what boat are you in? Are you a leader? Lead your boat. Lead your group. Understand, that's how big leadership is as we enter this week. Where he comes up with these things, where he tells these stories, but that's just interesting. That takes me someplace, you know, into their team.
I'm ready to run through a wall.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's just interesting.
Yeah, no, it's extraordinarily interesting. And obviously there are so many faces in college football. You talk about Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, but you've been all over. You've told stories about so many different teams, so many different families, players, situations. Which stories, when people come up to you, whether it's game day, whether it's at the supermarket, which stories do you feel like, we'll keep it within the college football realm, do you think have have been the most indelible that people have remembered and come up to you about? I know mine as it relates to college football.
I know the story about the kid from USC.
Yeah, Jake.
Jake.
Okay, now and Jake was largely done as a piece, was generated by Shelley
right.
Smith.
Yes.
And then largely done as a piece that we've revisited now.
Yes.
I mean, it turned into a film and many, many other wonderful things. I think the reason Jake resonates so deeply with people is because it's evolved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you tell the story and you think, oh, that's great. But it didn't end.
There's a second chapter.
And then a
chapter.
Third chapter. Yeah. And that's why I think in college football, the dynamic of Jake's story is unique.
Who do people come up to and talk about still to this day?
I mean, outside of a college football context, I would probably say the story that people have mentioned the most, and it may be because we run it every single year on 9/11, is we did the story about the man in the red bandana, Wells Crowther, the Boston College lacrosse player who worked on the 104th floor of the South
Tower.
And now
the school has fully embraced the red bandana.
And that came largely from Drew Gallagher, one of our great producers, who was a classmate of Wells and wanted desperately to tell that story. And I think once the school, it was interesting, the school was aware of the story. But when they saw it presented maybe by somebody else, obviously Drew being an alumnus, it hit them. And the football program absolutely embraced it. I mean, to the point where not this season, but a year ago, they beat USC as a top 10 team at Chestnut Hill, et cetera. So that would be one of them.
As you look out at the landscape of sports media in general, as a storyteller, where are there opportunities to, I guess, grow this genre of presenting stories, reporting in a different way?
The simple answer is everywhere. Yeah. You know, there's so many different college programs, and you just there's an inherent drama in a couple of things connected to the sport. The sport's aspirational, you know, and in a way that's richer and deeper than professional. You've made it in the NFL. Obviously, you're fighting to continue to make it, and then maybe you achieve a legendary status as defined by competitive greatness. But in college, it's just all still out there, shimmering and beckoning as a dream that can either be grasped or dropped. And there's an inherent drama in that. Second thing is, because players leave, it's a coach's game. And coaches' lives are fascinating in so many different ways. Saban is fascinating in how he was raised and how he's become the guy that he has in the pressurized atmosphere inside that building in Tuscaloosa when you walk in. Dabo's story. Now, the simple sign in his office, right? There's nothing less important in life than the score at halftime. If there was ever a guy who embodied that sign, a guy that, you know, slept in the same bed with his mom because they were impoverished.
College,
all of that is just, there's the simplest thing to say about any story, guys, and I think, again, this is leaving humor aside.
Sure.
And you could say it about a lot of things, I think, in life and a lot of things in bias and prejudice and opinion. I don't know when I discovered this or when I came to this opinion. So much of what's bad and negative and evil even is rooted in the general. So much of what's powerful and wonderful and changing is specific. And that's what a story is. If it has any effectiveness, it's specific. And you look at any roster, you know, I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson, who you may not have heard of, who's a defender on Alabama. One of the last things that, you know, his mom passed away of complications from diabetes, and one of the last things is, you know, he promised his mom as a junior in high school is, I'm going to play for Alabama because that's what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that's a line on a podcast or an interview, but not to that guy. Not to that guy who's got to lift the weights and go through and aspire to say, I told my mom that, and I made it happen. God, there's just something so inspirational sure. about that, to be around that. That's what I like.
So here's what's interesting about this interview, Dan.
Yes.
We see Tom Rinaldi.
Is that I talk too much?
No, yeah. no, no. We, in addition to your humbleness and your professionalism, we see Tom on the television. We did our little spoof bit many sure. years ago. Tom Rinaldi in person is 100% Tom Rinaldi on TV.
Oh, absolutely. There,
he is purely authentic. I feel mm-hmm. like I'm in the feature right now.
Yeah.
But can I tell you something? And I'd ask you guys to, the next time you hear a feature where I'm in it, and I'm very rarely in the pieces, but if you hear me ask a question, mm-hmm. it always strikes me as shrill. I think as we sit at this table,
right.
I'm me and I'm authentic. But when I hear it in the feature, mm-hmm. it sounds overwrought,
really,
and tinny and false. And it bothers me.
Do you like to watch back your own features?
No, it's brutal.
Does that bother you?
Oh, yeah. And I never watch them until a certain time. I watch the cuts of them.
Okay.
All right.
So you give it a chance
to make changes and things like that. I'm involved there. But watching them is tough because, again, so few. Every story is judged against. It lives and dies in the gap. Certain stories have epic potential.
Right.
And others are confections. How close did you come to closing the gap? The gap is brutal. And the gap's, you know, pretty much, I'd say, where we live. You know, we almost never close it.
See, I would happily have Tom record my outgoing message. He would never have to hear it. So he would never have to hear his own voice. And it would be something like, you've reached Dan Rubenstein. But in a way,
you
hasn't he reached you?
Beautiful. Can I say two more things, guys?
Please.
All right. So a long time ago, I don't even know how many years ago, because this is something my wife always says. People don't know, Tom, that you have that you're lighthearted and that
right.
you can be funny and et cetera. So I don't know how many years ago it was now. This is how long ago. When
okay.
Pac-Man Jones
sure.
was a college football player at West Virginia.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
We read in a tiny little throwaway piece about Rich Rodriguez that he demanded that every player, and I don't know if Rich Rod still does this, at West Virginia he did, every player had to know the name of every person that he could come in contact with in the football building.
Mm-hmm.
And that he would put up photos of people in the middle of team meetings and say, Ty, who is that?
It's like a Mac Brown thing almost.
And yeah. if you did not know, there was some sort of extra physical discipline, mm-hmm. okay, running, lifting, whatever it was. So we went there and we said, let's buy a Polaroid camera and let's see if it's really true. So we go. We take 6 pictures while we're there, Polaroid. Totally random people we saw in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And we did 6 interviews with players. And every player got every
wow.
single
wow.
person, and every player failed to identify the last person. And that was me.
That's great.
And I made a big show of saying my name a bunch of times. You know, when we met, I'm Tom Rinaldi, Tom. It'll be Ty, me and you, Ty talking to Tom, way over the top like that. But at the Pac-Man Jones, one of my favorite moments ever in his job, looked down at the Polaroid
mm-hmm.
and actually said, God, this guy looks so familiar to me.
With you standing right there.
Sitting as close as I am
sure.
to you right now. Yeah.
That's terrific.
Then looked up. I said, it's me. What's my name? And he said, oh, coach is going to kill me.
That's so incredible.
Yeah, one of my favorites, yeah. That's a great. Favorite.
Yeah. All right.
That's pretty good.
I don't think there's any better way to close out.
I am moved.
He's been so generous with his time. I got the tingles.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a little bit of those tingles. I don't have anything else. Do you have a specific tissue recommendation? Do you want with the lotion? Do you want it thicker, thinner, so you can go more?
It puts the lotion in the basket.
Can you tell us like a knock-knock joke or something to kind of break from the tearjerkers that we see?
Tom Rinaldi tells us the dirtiest joke.
This is the all right, so here's my only joke.
Okay.
My son Jack's 11 and our daughter Tess is 8. And I tell the joke and they hate the joke, but this is my joke.
Mm-hmm.
Guy walks into the library. makes his way back to the reference desk where the librarian is, and she's a little busy, sees him, comes up, says, "How can I help you?" He says, "Can I get a cheeseburger and some fries?" And she looks at him, kind of looks around, and says, "Sir, you're in the library." He says, "Oh, God, I'm sorry. Can I get a cheeseburger and some fries?"
It's a good joke. It's a good joke. I'd be embarrassed as an 11-year-old, but as a 32-year-old, I love it.
That's all I got for
it's
you.
A great dad joke.
Great dad joke. There you go.
How do you not like that?
Yeah, I
like
there it. You go.
All right. Tom Rinaldi, ESPN. He will be on the sidelines Monday night.
Monday night on the Bama side. 5 years, the reunion in the making.
That's it.
Yeah. I appreciate you.
Tom Rinaldi, the esteemed Tom Rinaldi from ESPN. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
Tom Rinaldi from ESPN, the esteemed storyteller. A couple stories regarding that interview. Not the least of which is this. Mid-interview, there was an issue in the media hotel that fried our equipment. Fried our equipment. And the whole second half of that interview was pretty much toasted. A lot of background noise, a lot of buzzing. Yeah. We had no way to cure it. That's when we reached out to our good friend Marcelo. Remember, this is the guy who put together our Yakko's Home Dog of the Week sound.
Oh, incredible.
We wanted to call in the heavy hitters for this one. So, of course, Yakko's Home Dog of the Week, Marcelo, he was able to spin some magic and make that happen. So we appreciate his help. He was the only reason we were able to run this interview at all. So thank you, Marcelo. The other thing that I will point out, and this is the God's honest truth, at one point mid-interview, you and I were kind of like drawn to him. He's a very engaging storyteller in person. And when we said it during the interview that the Tom Rinaldi you see on TV is exactly the same person in person, he really is. It's an authentic guy that you see on TV. And when he tells these stories to you in person, much like you are when you watch them on television at home, you're sort of drawn to him. Rinaldi has a gravity to him. At one point, you and I were like leaning over the table almost as if to try and reach out and shake his hand. Right. He really is an engaging storyteller. And after the interview, I sort of looked over at you and we shook our heads like, what was that? That was so good. And it was great to finally have him on the show. So we appreciate his time.
Yeah. And you kissed him.
No. Well, I don't know if you wanted that to be public, but sure.
Okay, fair. Sorry. It was just a peck and it was just like a friendly European thing.
Right. That's right.
No, he was outstanding. And I thought that the insight of trying to balance being on campus, having crazy fans, the whatever Cheez-It or Coke, whatever the sponsors are with shooting off things and mascot, celebrity, whatever it is, just it's a madhouse, the game day set. And to sort of balance that with the gravitas of telling these stories, these very human stories, has to be just in tone so impossible, but they do pull it off really, really well. And it's an excellent reminder that, you know, we cover the sport, we make jokes and we do all sorts of weird things, but it is a human sport with, you know, that affects humans and people center their lives and they look up to college football, whether it's players, programs, culture, whatever. It's they do a really, really good job capturing these stories.
Yeah, and he takes it seriously. He takes it seriously. Yes. There is a genuine concern on his behalf to make sure that he does these stories justice. He takes them very seriously. And I appreciated that. It was great to hear from him firsthand, Dan.
I'm fawning here, Ty.
Yeah.
But couldn't have had more fun doing it.
All right. Well, again, big thanks to Mr. Rinaldi for stopping by.
Mm-hmm.
As we mentioned on Twitter, if you purchased a shirt at some point in the last 2 weeks to benefit DIPG, those shirts are in the process of being shipped out. So please remain patient with us. We're doing our best to get those out right now. But we did receive a bit of sad news this past week, though, in terms of Avery and her struggle with DIPG.
Mm-hmm.
She did pass away earlier this week. Our hearts, our thoughts, our prayers are certainly with Brandon and his entire family. We appreciate the immense support that our Verballers have thrown behind this cause We're going to do another run of shirts. We're going to continue giving to this cause to try and cure this horrible disease.
Yeah, we are. We're heartbroken for the Huffmans. Brandon has always been incredibly kind and sweet and a great guy, and always impossible to see somebody in a situation like this. So hopefully, you know, the little bit that we raise can help out in a very small way. But yeah, it's awful. And from everything that we've seen, Avery was incredibly courageous and brave with her fight. So hopefully that will inspire and it will help somebody or some situation down the line. That's all we can hope for.
It was inspiring to see the reaction from the people that listen to this show, whether it was people
who
tweeted Brandon, whether it was people who tweeted us, whether it was people who didn't tweet, just posted on Facebook, or maybe didn't have anything to say publicly. But you guys certainly made it well known that you supported the cause, that we were all in Brandon and Avery's corner. And it's just been moving. It's been moving for both Dan and I. So
yeah,
we appreciate your support.
Go hug your loved ones. That's the best thing. And just sit, appreciate everything you have, because it's a weird ride we're all on.
We will be back in a week. We appreciate your support. Thanks again for tuning into the Solid Verbal, and stay solid.
Peace.